Welcome to the Nonprofit Growth Show, presented by Nonprofit Megaphone, the podcast where we highlight nonprofit leaders in the trenches who share the strategies and tactics they use to grow their organizations and make a difference each day. Let's dive in.
Hi, I'm Joe Whipple, and you are listening to the Nonprofit Growth Show. Ian Redman is here with me today. Ian is the Program Manager of CARE, which stands for Credit Abuse Resistance Education. Ian, I appreciate you joining. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you bet. My pleasure. So as is tradition on the Nonprofit Growth Show, I would love to start off with you sharing a story from your time in the nonprofit sector with our listeners, whether that's a nerve-wracking moment, exciting, whatever it may be. Do you have a story for us?
Yeah. So I do a little bit of everything, which I think we'll get into later for CARE. And one of the things I was in charge of a couple of years ago was putting together our fall fundraising reception. We often give a bunch of awards to our volunteers at that time. And I was in charge of building the event. And it was at a conference with about 600 attendees normally. And so I was like, I can build a great event, no problem. I've got this built-in audience. They've got nowhere else to be. And was feeling really good about it, have a bunch of sponsors. I have sold a bunch of tickets, and everything's going really, really well. Until about an hour before the event, I find out the hotel changed our room that we're in to the far side of campus, opposite of where the conference registration check-in is, opposite of where the opening reception is going to be, just completely back corner location. So I get there, I set up, and I'm really freaking out about just how many people are going to bail from my event because it's all the way on the opposite side of the hotel. There's a lot of other things going on. And I get all set up, and all of this like inner turmoil and anxiety hit me. And I'm like, oh my God, no one's going to show. No one's going to show. My board chair is there. She's like, it's going to be fine. And lo and behold, about 20 minutes into the event start time, like a group of 20 people walk up, and we hit our capacity about what we were expecting at about halfway through the event, and it all went great. And I always look at that moment for myself as a point of like, hey, things get stressful. It's going to be okay in the end. And you just have to kind of keep believing in the thing you build, knowing that if you built it right, it'll work. And so that's been probably my most stressful time in CARE, was believing that my event was going to just completely bomb. But it was an adventurous setup period, but I got through it. And now I have that lesson.
You know, I think that of all of the stories that are shared to me on this show, for people who like to share like the nerve-wracking ones like you just did, there is a commonality in that everybody ends up okay at the end of the day, and things felt like they were going to fall apart. This was going to be the end of the world. But I think that stepping back and from my perspective, listening to everybody share these stories, the common theme is that nothing is ever nearly as disastrous as we are capable of making it up in our mind to be.
Anxiety is a very powerful force. And when you are in its grip, it is hard to escape it. That is for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. I totally agree. So kind of moving on from that, I would love to hear a little bit about your personal journey and how you've been involved with CARE and what the organization is doing to make a difference. I know for you that this organization goes beyond just being, you know, maybe necessarily like another job or another step towards your career, but it has been, personally impactful from a financial standpoint as well, with what you've been able to learn and how it's impacted, you know, where you are with student loans and so forth. So can you kind of incorporate that story while you also explain to our listeners what CARE is all about?
Yeah. So, CARE is a really personal mission to me because I've lived a lot of what we talk about at CARE, which is personal financial literacy, capability, knowledge. And, you know, we often hear from adults when we speak with them about what we do that, oh man, I really wish that I had had care come into my high school and talk to me. And I am that exact case. 'Cause I was a typical know-it-all teenager who thought, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I know exactly where I want to go to college. I know what major I want to do. I know what internships I want to apply for. Like, I have my whole life planned out and nothing is ever going to mess that up. The school I chose was a very expensive private university, and I hadn't really given much thought to the finances and all of this. I have all of my plans figured out mentality. And so I applied to the school that I was destined to go to, according to 18-year-old me, and I was accepted. And I got a really generous financial aid package, which was about half of the total cost, except as a private, expensive, financial, you know, financially burdensome university, it was still leaving me about $20,000 a year, $25,000 a year that I had to cover on my own outside of the financial aid package. And so that was a lot of money to try to figure out. And I had no idea where I was going to get that money. I filled out the FAFSA, and my parents were in these in-between cases that a lot of people find themselves in, where the FAFSA's algorithm spits out that the expected family contribution is high enough that they aren't qualified for any other federal aid. But the realistic financial situation is that that is just not feasible for a family to cough up $25,000 a year for a student's student's higher education. And I was in that position where, after having a very hard conversation with my parents, we realized that it wasn't going to work. And I wasn't well versed in how to look for scholarships and grants. And so I went to Google, and I Googled, how do I pay for college? And I actually clicked on a Google ad at the time for one of the nation's largest student lenders. And in 15 minutes, without talking to another human being, I was approved for a $25,000 student loan at the age of 18. And I was actually pretty fortunate. These are private student loans, so you're afforded fewer protections than if they're offered by the federal government or backed by the federal government. And I took out a private student loan all 4 years I went to school. And I say that I'm fortunate because I graduated in 3.5 years instead of 4. I also had a job my senior year that paid for my housing outright. So my bill could have been much higher than it was. I graduated with $83,000 in private student loan debt and had no idea that it was going to be that big, that my monthly payment was going to be almost $1,000, which was about the same as my rent payment in Alexandria, Virginia, at the time. And I just had no idea how I'd gotten myself into that position, because I didn't have the skills I needed to understand what financial choices that I was making. I should have known to ask the tough questions, like, what's the interest rate going to be? Is it fixed? Is it variable? What's my expected monthly payment going to be? How am I going to pay for these loans? But I just didn't even know to ask those questions, because in my school, growing up in Wisconsin, we didn't talk about personal finance. We talked about it a little bit in my family, but none of them had ever gone to college where they needed to take out massive amounts of student loans like I had. And I was in this really unique position where I had to figure out this new financial landscape. And it became really important to me that other people going to school after high school were better prepared than I was. And so I had the opportunity to join the CARE staff. And I thought, what better organization than CARE, to kind of continue that personal passion. And what CARE does is we talk to high school students, college students, young adults, teenagers about personal finances. We do it with the real world perspective in mind. All of our presentations are given by volunteers who are financial professionals. We were founded by a bankruptcy judge. Most of our volunteers are in some form or fashion involved in bankruptcy or insolvency work. But we also have a lot of volunteers who are bankers, financial planners, tax advisors, CPAs, and they speak to our students about personal finances from the perspective of, hey, I've seen what this looks like. I've seen what happens when someone makes a mistake. I've seen what happens when, things don't go your way and you're at the very bottom of, financial success or financial issues. And so you are, lucky because you get a clean slate and you get this information. And here's what we want you to think about. Here's the questions you should be asking, the things you should look out for. And we really focus on motivating them to care about their personal finances, which is what I think something that I've learned a lot in the 3+ years that I've worked here, but something that, we continue to work on nationwide as an organization.
And, student loan debt has been such a popular topic for years now because it's been such an ongoing issue. Is there any advice that you would give to people coming out of high school, considering a higher education, before they just dive on in and maybe make some of the same mistakes that you did?
Yeah. And the key piece of it is we really hope that we can have this conversation before you're graduating high school and about to go off to college, because at the point of graduating high school, it's almost too late in what we can help them do. Just because college and university is so expensive nowadays. The big things that we talk about, we kind of say that you need to prioritize your higher education decisions and how you're going to pay for them in 4 big steps. And the first one, which is the most important, is understanding just how much it's going to cost you and figuring out if it actually has to cost as much as that you think it does. And so looking at things like going to a 2-year university to get the general education courses out of the way before transferring to a larger university to finish your major, that's a huge cost saving opportunity. And a lot of places like California now are offering free or extremely cheap 2-year college that offers the same quality education as, going to a 4-year school for those first 2 years of courses. Things like making sure that you are saving something, anything, as much as you can for college, starting in middle school, if you're the student, if you're a parent, starting as early as you can. Even $25 or $50 a month, which in some families is a huge burden, goes a long way to helping defray some of that money that you may have to borrow to go to college. The third thing is looking at your scholarship and grant opportunities. The biggest thing that you can do as a student in high school is build your resume so that when it comes time to look for scholarships and grants, you know what some of your interests are. You know kind of where you can look based on those interests and based on what you've done and some of the like extracurriculars or clubs or jobs you might have had. And then really leaning on the resources available in your school, those guidance counselors, career counselors, et cetera. After those three things are done, once you've maximized your cost savings, once you've maximized how much money you're able to set aside, and once you're pretty sure you've found all the grant opportunities that that you can, then we talk about student loans and we talk about borrowing money. And even that is a detailed conversation where, we really prioritize only borrowing what you need to in order to get your degree. And so not borrowing more than you need to, not borrowing in ways that are, that are more inherently risky. So like looking at things like federal government loans, the federally backed loans are safer for borrowers in the long term. They often also carry lower interest rates, things like that. Not to say that private student loans are bad. You just have to be a little more careful who you're borrowing from and what the terms and conditions are.
Well, I think it's really, really a smart strategy for you guys to be taking on high schools and trying to get some of these lessons and some of these resources out there before these big decisions are made. I think that I'm sure that you guys have really, really positively impacted so many people who have gone on to higher education without making some huge financial burdens that didn't necessarily have to be because of your advice. Do you guys work with or advise folks who have graduated from college and have student loan debt, but don't know how to tackle it if they're in like a pinch post higher education pinch? Or do you just work on the preventative measures with high schoolers?
I mean, a majority of our work is that preventative work in the schools and youth organizations and colleges. But if we encounter someone who's having, say, financial troubles or are really feeling that financial struggle after college graduation, they've entered into adulthood or whatever, we as an organization try really, really hard to identify quality, reputable resources that we can refer them to help them get the help that they may need. Things like nationally accredited credit counselors, if that's the issue that is that they're facing, or you know, heaven forbid, if they're in a really bad situation, looking at whether or not bankruptcy is the right option. We just help them kind of identify the resources and materials they might need in those cases, because our real expertise is in the preventative measures in the schools.
Excellent. Thanks for clearing that up for me. Mm-hmm. So It was clear in your answers and in what you guys are all about that having a volunteer base to go out and actually do the educating, to step into these schools, into these classrooms, auditoriums, is a huge part of your mission and what makes you successful. When it comes to building those relationships and expanding your reach, what are some of the tactics that you guys use to increase that base and spread your mission through them?
Absolutely. So the biggest thing about CARE is that we are 99% volunteer-based. We only have 2 full-time paid staff nationwide, and we have chapters in 35 states, D.C. and Puerto Rico, that are all volunteer driven. And so our volunteers are really important to us. And so when we look at building those relationships, we're looking for a couple of things. The first and most important one is that we want someone who is extremely passionate about our mission, that they believe, like we do, that personal finance and financial literacy, financial capability are extremely important pathways to being financially successful as an adult, and that, you know, those are some of the most important tools you can have to achieve your dreams here in American society when we've got an ever increasingly complicated financial system. Other than that passion, we really focus on identifying volunteers who are comfortable speaking to others, that they have relationships in the schools, because our volunteers generate their presentations that they're giving through their personal contacts, through their church youth groups, through parents and neighbors and cousins and family that they may have that work in the schools. And so we're really grassroots focused. And so if we can get someone who's passionate and who's okay rolling up their sleeves and doing the work and trying to find a way to spread our program in their communities, you know, that's our ideal volunteer. And we do that a number of ways. We do a lot of recruiting, obviously through our relationship with NPM, but also in person at conferences and events and emails, et cetera. But we really focus on finding those volunteers that are passionate. And you would not believe how many of those there are out there who realize just how important this mission is.
Would you say it's more difficult for you to find a volunteer who aligns with everything you just described, or to find a venue that one of your volunteers can go present at?
Oh, absolutely. Getting into schools is our toughest challenge as an organization. Instructional minutes are so few, and they're increasingly filled up with district and state requirements that a lot of schools have pulled back on the number of outside organizations that they partner with. And so one of our biggest challenges as an organization has been getting consistent access into local school districts in the communities in which our volunteers operate. We've made a lot of headway over the past few years, but that's absolutely our biggest challenge.
That really surprises me, because I don't know, that just shocks me. I feel like schools would be lined up out the door to say, yes, teach our students to be fiscally responsible. Whether or not they are going to college, tell them about, put this idea of thinking about finances in a different way. And if they are pushing for a higher education, provide them with the resources to start at more of an advantage than they were if they didn't hear from you. That to me is so much more valuable than one extra day of any subject that they can currently be teaching.
I will definitely agree with you on that. And just add that only 19 states in the United States really offer any sort of substantial financial education coursework at the high school level. Fewer than that require a full semester long dedicated personal finance course in the high schools. And so getting it to be a priority in the U.S. education system is a huge effort in both CARE and also all of our partner organizations that also do financial education work here in the U.S.
So is the problem then just they don't see the time as valuable enough to have students miss a period of class, or there's too much red tape that in terms of booking this, or are they paying for these people to come in? Are they paying a portion to you guys as a nonprofit? What is really like the biggest issue?
Well, CARE is 100% free to any organization that requests a presentation, and always has been, always will. We never charge a penny to any school or organization we give our program to. I think in some cases, offering the curriculum in the classroom from their own teachers is a cost issue. From these partner organizations, as long as they're a nonprofit that offers free resources, of which there are plenty, that's not so much an issue. I think it's a time issue as well as a red tape issue, but there's 50 different departments of education here nationally. And so it's a different issue depending on where you are in the U.S.
Gosh, I'm just thinking, like, do it during lunch. If a kid wants to listen to what you have to say during lunch and it's volunteer based and you can help 50 kids out of, you know, a school of a couple hundred or even more than that, maybe a couple thousand, that is still so much value added to what your goal is. It's like if you as a school cannot sacrifice the time during the classroom, there is so many outside of the classroom opportunities that I feel like they could, if they were thinking a little more outside the box, or if they were valuing this as much as you or people who have, you know, experienced this firsthand, that this is a big deal, then I feel like they would kind of get creative and make way for it. Hopefully that starts happening.
Well, Joe, whenever you're ready for your next career change, I have a job for you as CARE's number one spokesperson, because, you know, that that's exactly what we talk to with a lot of our school district administrators. We try to build those partnerships at the school district level and work with them to be flexible on when exactly we get access to their student populations. And we do have some of that where we access the student population at weird times, after school programs in the mornings. Sometimes, though, the schools are really accommodating and just give us their entire student population at once, auditorium style. One of our chapters, I think this is really cool, in Louisville, Kentucky, they work with the school district and set aside 2 days, which they call their blitz, and they reach every single high school senior in Jefferson County, Kentucky, in a 2 day period. And so they just try to like basically knock out all this really important education at a time that works for the schools. And it's just sometimes hard with all the logistical challenges and the state requirements and things like that to find the time. But we try to be really accommodating it and work with them to make it happen.
And I'm sure it does get complicated because it's easy for me to say, we'll make this happen. We'll do this. Like, come on, schools. Like, there's lunch. There's, you know, oh, you play sports after school and you have to stretch for 30 minutes as a team before practice starts. Well, guess what? The coach is going to have this volunteer come in. And for the 30 minutes that everybody is just following somebody stretching, you're going to learn about how to improve your kickstart to higher education financially. It's like, there's got to be different ways, but I totally get it from the perspective of organizational issues. It's like, it's not super easy to just walk in and say, hey, I want to talk to the kids about this without really making sure things are okay.
Yeah. And we get creative too as an organization. One of the things that we've really been talking with our volunteers about is looking at kind of some of the non-school venues where we can reach the same student population, just not during a traditional class period. So looking at things like partnering with those after-school extracurricular clubs, looking at things like church youth groups.
Yeah, that's really smart.
Boys and girls clubs, you know, anything where we have an attentive audience of people ages 14 to 22, you know, we really try our best to you know, reach them and give them the message because everyone needs it. It's the one facet of adulthood that is a requirement, no matter who you are, no matter what your life situation is, you're going to have to manage your personal finances, whether that is, you know, $15,000 a year or $15 million a year, that personal finance aspect is extremely important to you and you have to do it and there's no getting out of it.
Last question about this before I'm going to change the topic a little bit, but have you tried getting the student population to present it to their school as, hey, I want this. There's a group of us who thinks that this would be a really good thing to do, versus going to these schools and saying, hey, your students need this. So whether that's, you know, targeted ads or a place on your website with an article that is, you know, if you're looking into college, like, you know, that the financing aspect of it is so important, like, you know, sign up here for us to reach out to your school on your behalf, so that we can come in and do a presentation for your class. Because I feel like then the teachers or the school board and everyone else would maybe respond a little differently if it's like, oh, wow, this is actually, the idea came from a student versus, you know, this third party organization.
Yeah. And so we can do that a little bit when we know who the students are. We're really sensitive about students' privacy, given that most students are still minors when they're in high school. So we try to actually go more through the parent channels than the student channels. If the parents then talk to their kids about figuring out who to reach out to, that's great. We love that. But, you know, we go mostly to our volunteers and say, you know, we know you're part of the PTA, you're part of your HOA or your neighborhood association. You know, why don't you talk to them about getting into their kids' schools? And let's see if we can, you know, approach this from a grassroots level, from the parent associations where you've got 30 parents in high school who are like, no, I really want my kid to get this education. You know, let me go talk to the principal or let me call the econ teacher or let me call the history teacher and see if they can figure out a way to get care into the schools. And that's been our biggest sort of grassroots, you know, up from the bottom up type of influence into the schools where we've been trying to get more reach. And, you know, we reach about 20,000 students a year. So it's not that we aren't reaching.
Yeah,
folks.
Yeah, that's
it's
amazing.
Just a challenge.
Oh, yeah. 20,000 kids is incredible. It's absolutely incredible. So as I'm thinking about your organization, you know, 99.9% volunteer based, everything you offer to schools is done for free for them. A couple things cross my mind. One is that you have to have the funding somehow to be able to support yourself. And two, other organizations out there who are maybe very similar, where we offer these free services because we're so mission based and we work with tons of volunteers in order to, you know, help us keep these services free. There is a little bit of complexity in the thought process behind, well, how do we measure success at the end of the day? Mm-hmm. Is success measured through a combination of, you know, how many volunteers we have, how many students we've reached, our donations? But if that's the case, then, you know, you're so mission based. Where does the weight come in terms of donations versus just overall outreach? So what has been your kind of thought process or that you've had with the team or with donors behind how do we measure success at the end of the year? You know, what has made this year successful for CARE?
That is the $10 million question, in the fact that, you know, measuring impact in financial education has been a matter of debate for a really long time now, among all the various organizations that do it. You know, can you truly measure whether or not you have a long-term impact based on financial education, whether that's 1 hour or one semester? You know, to do that, you really have to follow these students into adulthood with a longitudinal study and see if, you know, they are making smarter financial decisions than they otherwise would, compared to if they hadn't received your curriculum or your program. So that's a really hard question to answer in terms of the impact, which I think is one thing that you've hit. And we're still trying to figure out how exactly we do that. And we've been trying to use technology more to better our evaluation tools, to better understand how students are feeling at the end of our presentations, what they think they've learned, you know, any sort of kind of anecdotal evidence that they feel like this has really changed their lives. And we do get some of that, and that plays a big part into it. Another part of how we measure our success is how many students we're able to reach, because it's a numbers game in a lot of ways. So if we can reach 20,000 students a year, you know, we are very confident that there's some percentage of them that has had their life positively impacted from the work that we do. And if we can double that to 40,000 or 100,000 in the next few years, and really grow our reach, we feel like we can do even more for the community. We've never really had a student who's walked away from our presentation and looked at us and said, yeah, thanks, I didn't need that, and then like walked on to their next course. So we feel like if we can reach more students every year, then we can have a bigger and bigger impact. And that's really how we've been looking at it, given that we don't really have the capacity to do those longitudinal studies and figure out just how much technical impact we've been having in the long term. But, you know, we've been doing a lot more in terms of measurement to figure out how students are thinking and feeling right at the end of receiving our program. As for the money side, which I think you hit on, is, you know, we're funded by donations, by partner organizations. One of our biggest partners is the American Bankruptcy Institute, which helped us get started as a 501c3, and has been a huge supporting network for us over the past 20 years of our existence. But then we also depend a lot on individual donors, corporate sponsorships, and you know, people who say, I really like your mission, I want to help out, you know, here's a check. And so in some sense, as long as we're able to keep operating and reach, you know, more people and grow and expand our organization, you know, we view that as a successful year.
Oh, yeah. And I would certainly agree. I think that the longitudinal studies, or the idea of maybe in the future having a case study, from just a capacity standpoint, totally makes sense. It's like, there are some things I think that are just so clear, this being one of them, which is like, we are putting out so much valuable information. This has got to be helping people. And because it's maybe difficult to measure it as if we're measuring, you know, a click on a website or a, you know, receiving a check from a donor, it doesn't quite work the same. That I don't think it's as big of a deal, because I think everybody that's on board really sees the value in what you're doing, regardless of even just a number like, yeah, we reached 20,000 students this last year. Like, that to me is the number that's going to be the game changer. Like, now how do you get that to 40? How do you get that to 60? And so on. Speaking of getting it to 40 and 60, as we wrap up here, what are you most excited for about, you know, this upcoming year, 2020?
I think the most exciting thing for me in terms of care stuff is that we've just grown our team. We added on some part-time help. And we also just passed a brand new strategic plan. And there are a couple things that I've been really pushing for over the past few years, in terms of volunteer support to help them grow their local chapters and their local kind of outcomes. And we finally have top of our priority list some of these really important training tools and resources. And so this year in 2020 and in 2021, some of those long-term goals will finally come to fruition. And, you know, care only has better places to go from here, which is, I think, the most exciting thing.
Amazing. Yeah, I'll be excited to stay in touch and watch as you guys continue to grow and implement these strategic advances. Well, Ian, I appreciate it. If our listeners want to connect with you or look into care, or if they, you know, have a school or a student that needs this information, where should they go?
Absolutely. So our website is care4yourfuture.org. That is care4yourfuture.org. You can also reach us at Care for Your Future on Twitter. They can email me at iredman@careforyourfuture.org. And I will just add on to what Joe said, in that if you are a parent or a student and you really think that this is something that should be in your school, please reach out to us. Let's figure out if we can get a presentation in your local community to help provide this education, because we want to come give the presentations. We just need to be invited.
Excellent, Ian. Thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Growth Show, presented by Nonprofit Megaphone. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or giving us a rating or review on your favorite podcast network. We appreciate your support. Until next time.